Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, the leading authority on cyber, information security, and risk management. I'm Tavia Gilbert, and I'm so glad to welcome you back to another cutting-edge conversation tailored to CISOs, CTOs, CROs, and other global security pros. In every episode of ISF's media, CEO Steve Durbin speaks with rule breakers, collaborators, culture builders, and business creatives who manage their enterprise with vision, transparency, authenticity, and integrity. And he brings that conversation to you, your teams, and your partners. Today, Steve speaks with actress, voice coach, leadership consultant, and expert in core energetics or body-led psychotherapy, Kate Montague. In this warm conversation, Kate discusses the effectiveness in taking time to reset, what happens when you stay connected to your body and your breath, how to take the temperature of the room when the rooms are remote, and more. Here's Steve.
So Kate, it's lovely to see you. Thanks very much indeed for joining us on the podcast. You're a voice tutor with a background in core energetics, which is body-led psychotherapy. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's a really interesting background for one of our podcasts. We've never had a voice tutor on here before.
Thanks, Steve. I started with voice work as a student in 1995. I went into actor training in London. I left Ireland to do that and discovered through the training that for me, one of the keys to the kingdom of being an actor who was really present and in the space and able to listen well was through the voice work. So that's when I started to tap voice skills as a transformative practice, let's say. And I took that into the industry for 11 years and spent time as an actress, had ups and downs, and really redefined my sense of success by recognizing I wasn't creatively fired up any longer. And although I had this wonderful creativity and toolkit from the training, I wanted to go deeper. And I had acquired some experiences along the way where I felt I had become frozen and needed to melt some of the armor that had come in as a result of being disconnected. So what I did was I went home or back to the alma mater, Central School of Speech and Drama, to do a master's in voice. And so began this discovery into the phenomenon of voice and working with people who somehow, like myself, had lost connection to being able to speak out, speak up, get connected, feel authentic, feel safe in expression. And that became a thirst of mine, a hunger to keep the research going. And as I went on, I wanted a deeper vocabulary because, of course, the voice is the body and the body is the voice. And that was something that took me a long time to learn, in that I found it difficult to land in my own body. I was somebody who energetically would go out if I was feeling uncomfortable. And through grounding and recognizing that we have ways of managing our energy, blocking our flow, I dug a little deeper. I saw an evolutionary process happening in a colleague of mine. And I thought, I really want some of that. And he said, well, I'm doing some core energetics. Come and join me. And so it was this train journey that was very juicy, very special. And I felt I couldn't get off the train. So here I am now wanting to share it. And that's what I bring to my work. I combine my practices, the voice work, the core work, in the process of helping people observe self, go deeper, and find ways of transforming.
And all of that, of course, is hugely relevant today, isn't it? I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Most people, I think, have by now anyway, got heartily sick of working remotely, staring into Zoom cameras or whatever it happens to be. But I think certainly if I look at our membership, the people who tend to listen to these podcasts, you know, the security professionals who are perhaps not as accustomed to using, to use your words, voice as a means of potentially communicating some of the challenges. And so this whole remote working, this absence, you know, away from people has really exacerbated the situation for them. So what are the sorts of hints and tips that you could give them to rediscover themselves, rediscover their ability to communicate effectively?
It's a great question. And I agree. I hard agree. At a time like this, this screen business, being in a Zoom box, it creates more distance and separation unless we maximize it or take advantage of how do we make it work for us. And I think people out there, people I work with, are doing great things at the moment by facing it and by examining, well, the basics. I've worked with clients who want to get on with the order of the day of, let's say, making a presentation to a board. But I write back and say, how are you doing with the camera? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, oh, I hate looking at my own image. And, you know, we start with that. Well, do you need to look at your own thumbnail? How about looking at the person in front of you and tuning in there? Because, of course, screens bring up such an image-based issues for all of us. So starting there, framing, making sure people are sat comfortably, that they're not too low down, they're not too high up, and maybe misconstruing their bodily presence, that, you know, they're underselling themselves or they're taking up too much space. With a voice, it's really interesting how people who have experience and are seasoned presenters, they now have to do town halls to 50 plus people. But of course, they're on camera. And like you and I, they're really needing to create an intimacy, a shared experience. And so the technique there is to imagine that you're still talking to one person or maybe four. You know, even Zoom themselves, you might have heard this, Steve, in marketing as the pandemic kicked off, they said at a conference, please, everybody, imagine you're talking to your own family. Mm-hmm. Make it warm, make it intimate, aim to connect, create resonance.
A similar point actually was made. We've just finished running our Congress, which this year had to be totally digital. And we started that with a band. We had Texas, and I was talking to Charlene Spiteri. And we had a question from one of our members at the beginning of that as to what was her advice for performing, if you like, in front of no audience that you can actually see. And, you know, she pretty much said what you've just said. It's about that visualization. And I think that for people who perhaps are working in a sales environment, a marketing environment, I mean, you're an actress, so clearly you're used to being in front of a camera. But again, if I bring that back into the security community, of course, very few of them are used to that. And so that has, I think, been a real challenge for them. So this sort of visualization, I think, is a good tip. You also mentioned communicating with the board. Again, you know, that's another big challenge. We've been trying to encourage chief information security officers to have much more interaction at board level over the past few years. But one of the things that I've noticed is that you have this, I don't know what the right word is, probably it's not friction, but it's sort of inability to communicate on both ends of the camera. So board members who also are not great at doing it with then the security professional who isn't as well. The question is, how do you break the ice in that kind of situation? You don't have the ability to, you know, grab a coffee together or to walk into the room. You're just there. Hopefully it's working.
It's recognizing it. You know, you're raising awareness here around this, recognizing that we don't have the icebreaker, and therefore to acknowledge from the get-go, even if the order of the day is very serious and it's about getting ahead of the curve and all the strategies that get laid out. But before that, it's exactly what you're implying here, Steve, is to put people first and to break that ice by being warm, being curious about who's in the room, letting them know how you feel about being in the room. That can be a light bulb for some people. Is it okay that I share how I'm feeling? At a time like this, never more so, given that we're all feeling the strain and the stress and we respond. You know, you can bring abundance in your presence as you're doing right now with me. I can see you on the screen. You're very calm, you're very grounded, and I can feel there's a connection to your breath. That is a gift to me. It helps me settle. It helps me to listen. So sometimes I think leaders will feel they have to do a lot, you know, like, let's get moving. Let's get straight on and deliver. But you're right, raise awareness around who's in the room, why we're here, and that we're here doing the best that we can with what we've got, and go from there.
And the technology is sometimes with us, sometimes against us. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed is a tendency perhaps for people to feel that they need to fill the silence, which you wouldn't do in a normal conversation, because clearly, you know, a lot of what we do is picked up in the visual tics and so on. But there is this tendency, isn't there, because we're separate, that if there's a gap, you know, has the technology gone down? Are you still there? You know, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Which doesn't help, particularly if you're a little bit nervous.
Surely. And a pause is not an idle gap. A pause is energetic. It can be pregnant and full with a moment of relief and release for the speaker, the leader, the audience get to filter, digest, take in. And that breath is so important to calm the nerves. You know, you spoke earlier about visualization, you know, and how well the Congress went. Congratulations on the courage it takes to transmit it or transfer it to digital. I think that's great. But I do think a part of this work, this ice-breaking work, and this connection work is really asking yourself in advance what your intention is, and to break it down really simply. What am I showing up for in the board? How do I want to focus my attention? Is it with the intention to connect? Am I committing to my intention to help, to share, to trust? And I think those moments of pause to come back to the intention and then to carry on.
It's all about the planning, isn't it? And I think that that, again, is something that perhaps we've lost somewhat, because, you know, one of the things I think I've been trying to encourage people at the ISF to do is not to slip into this, let's have a back-to-back meeting, because it's easy. I don't need to travel. I've finished talking to you in however long, and I can move straight on to the next. Whereas in actual fact, there needs to be space, doesn't there? There needs to be the planning time. There needs to be just the decompression, the rethink, the reset, call it what you will.
All great words. Reset, you know, we need to reset the nervous system. That's a birthright. We come on this earth in a container, our body, it's ourself. And of course, there's an emotional body, a physical body, and a mental body. Business is such that we can externalize only. We get busy with other people. We get lost in the back-to-back meetings. We lose our creative response. This will happen. We're human. And we can get triggered and we go into survival mode. So we're controlling, or we're gripping, or we're forcing, or we're blaming and, you know, criticizing and so on. So as you say, taking that space, it's similar to coming off the court in Wimbledon. You wouldn't expect the players to keep bashing it out. Those golden moments that they take to sit out, catch their breath, you know, need to come back to a deep breath more deeply than normal, to feel the sensations of the body, to really have a check-in. What do I need? What am I missing? Where can I shore up? And I often say to a client, take a 5-minute think break. Lie down for 5 minutes if the body is really feeling it, and come back stronger, roomier, and more in your fullness.
That's something I'd like to go into in a little bit more detail, because I think people perhaps listening to this could be sitting there thinking, well, you know, I'd love to be able to take that time out, but, you know, doesn't Kate realize just how busy I am? You know, I've got all of these things to do. How do people create that space? I mean, there must be some advice you can give in that particular area, because you work with leaders all around. And so you must be seeing that, especially at the moment, I think, where there's this, you know, feeling that you have to be busy, you have to get going, you have to keep engaging.
I love that you bring this energy, and that's what can happen in the initial stages of process work or support work, is bringing out those, well, I'm busy, or I really can't drop the control. If I do, something will happen, something will go wrong. So here you're bringing out images. You know, we can get saturated with images around distorted thinking around where we fall down. And recognizing what the thinking is so transformative. It's so liberating. Of course, I agree, Steve, that anyone entering into this frame, it takes trust. It takes a vulnerability, or if the trust and vulnerability isn't quite there, a commitment, some kind of willingness to say, well, hang on, I'm trying it this way, but it feels quite hard, quite gripped. And I'm wondering how to do it another way. But it's very hard to let go at the beginning of what the recursive pattern might be, the looping pattern. But beginning to acknowledge what's there first and realize that, yeah, that's what I do. I hold on tight. And then in the evening, I burn out and I've got nothing left, or I'm awake all night worrying. And so it's drip feeding, you know, it's really taking those 2 minutes, 3 minute moments and helping the client recognize that, I feel different. There's a shift. I feel, my focus is back. I can balance my creative and analytical thinking. I feel warmer. I feel more connected to the relationship and in my trust. So I think it takes time, as you say, to get in there. But once you do, I think the time rearranges itself accordingly. So you redefine your priorities.
I think it's a couple of really encouraging things in that case. You know, you talk about 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I mean, everybody can find 2 to 3 minutes, right? So we're not talking about taking ourselves away for, you know, a couple of hours. It's just 2 to 3 minutes. So we can build that in. And the other thing that occurs to me just listening to you is that's pretty much what people have traditionally done, but in a normal work environment, right? So they've got up and gone and got themselves a cup of tea or a coffee or whatever it is. You know, walk down the office and, you know, that sort of thing. So what we're trying to do is to build back in to this somewhat what started out as being an artificial, unnatural environment, and which unfortunately is becoming increasingly more the norm. Some of the different ways of coping with the way in which we have to go about working today. Let's go on a little bit though and talk about some strategies that you may be able to help with, particularly around mental health. So, you know, we've talked a lot already here about the fact that we're working remotely and that's just the way that it is. But for me, that presents a huge number of challenges from a mental health, from a stress management point of view. Any advice you can give people who are perhaps feeling the strain at the moment around that?
Well, we're circling round here a huge topic of how when we're under duress normally, as you say, we can settle the body. And it's science-backed. Neuroscience tells us that it takes 2-3 minutes to reset the nervous system via breath and awareness. But of course, the pandemic's here. So old traumas, which we inevitably all have through living and experiencing, are more triggered. So there's that feeling of, you know, do I get thrown outside the cave, which is a very scary place to be. How's my job? You know, is it certain? Can I look after my family, myself? So these extra triggers, because of the climate, it just means that we can expect more manifestations of tension and stress. So I think it's really, really important to do that recognition. I call it RAIN, to recognize, acknowledge, investigate, and nurture. So recognizing what's happening is key to actually go, hang on, I'm having a moment where I feel I'm not coping, or I'm beginning to go into some kind of dysregulation that I'm not able to ground. And by recognizing it, you're coming close to acknowledging the consequences. I think you can then get closer to investigating, as you would with a friend or a child. It's that listening in, you know, what's going on? I often say, put it beside you on a cushion. And check it out, you know, look at your fears or look at your concerns or your whatever it might be and see what it's asking for. And that listening quality can often reveal, I do really need space, or I haven't been, you know, open. I've been shutting down, I've been closing up, or what have you. And I think then with mental health, we need to nurture. So, you know, you go from recognize, acknowledge, investigate, and nurture. So at this time in particular, being kind to ourselves is so very important. So there isn't a sense of going to our dictatorship or, you know, the diktat that goes, stop, you know, stop it. You know, you need to get it together and pull your socks up, which is very often the school of learning we come from. And it only brings out the rebel. So it's coming back to being kind.
I think one of the other things I've noticed is that, you know, again, if I look at our membership, very many of them have teams that are spread all around the world. For some of those people, they probably haven't met face to face for, if they've got new people starting, ever. But even those they've known, you know, they may not have seen them for 10 months, 11 months, 12 months. That's certainly the case with some of my guys in North America, for instance, not seeing each other for all of this year. And that presents its own challenges as well, doesn't it? Because it's one thing to be able to pick up on some of the anxiety or the stress, you know, if you're seeing somebody. But if you are working that remotely, from a leadership standpoint, you know, if I'm running a global security team, very high pressure, huge stress, how do I, as the CISO, the person running that team, pick up on some of these real challenges that perhaps my people are experiencing in a remote country, perhaps where we don't benefit from some of the cultural flexibility, if I could put it that way, that you were just talking about. So you can't have some of those conversations. Where do I go as a leader? How do I become more effective?
It's so interesting you ask this question, because somebody put that to me recently, and he was concerned about his leadership, and he asked, how do I check the temperature of the room when I lead these meetings so remotely? How do I know what's going on for people? And I think here's where some pre-meeting planning is worthwhile. I think for a meeting to be effective on Zoom, where there's senior management trying to lead people and show up and assure, hold space with people, that it's worthwhile sending out polls in advance or resourcing the talent that you've got and acknowledging the skill set in your teams by asking them to pool their questions and their additions to, you know, the meeting, what they want to bring, their contribution. So it becomes collaborative so that people feel included and seen by you. So planning the meeting in that sense, and then in the meeting itself, to ensure that what you need to get across, of course, that goes without saying, but also to make sure that you let that time for Q&A so people feel heard, that questions are taken, and that if there isn't time for individuals to come forward, that you're reading from those questionnaires that you've pooled in advance. And, you know, that is not always the easy part. That first meeting can lead to bumps on the road and can bring up the need for some hard conversations. And I think here's the time where we should really honor them or even welcome them in, because I think right now one of the silver linings from COVID is that these hard conversations we may have avoided before, but because people are peaking or up in their energy or their stress, I think that there's more willingness to get things out. And if leaders can really welcome in those tough conversations and be even willing to run a meeting again, if necessary, to drill down a little deeper, and to make sure that people are seen and included and heard, that this can lead to greater things in our future and beyond COVID, that the silver lining from COVID is that we've got braver. I really believe that we all individually right now are becoming bigger leaders than we ever were.
So planning, collaboration, taking time, being much more aware, I guess, of the fact that we are using somewhat artificial means of communication, all really important. And that's a lovely way to end, I think, in that silver lining that you just alluded to there. So Kate Montague, it's been fantastic talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time.
Pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Like Kate, my professional career has specialized in voice. So I particularly love this conversation with actress, coach, and voice expert Kate Montague. Having been in her vocal presence today, do you feel a deeper sense of calm, groundedness, and peace? I do. And this isn't just because she has a beautiful and well-trained vocal instrument. As Kate has shared with us, and as she embodies in this conversation with Steve, the simple act of working with your body and your breath, taking a moment to breathe in the middle of a high-stakes situation, taking a break, if only 2 or 3 minutes, to recognize, acknowledge, investigate, and nurture, is powerful and transformative. Will you try Kate's RAIN technique? Are you paying closer attention to your breath? Is it making a difference in your work? Join us on our LinkedIn page at linkedin.com/company/information-security-forum and let us know what your experience has been. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. In our next episode, Steve speaks with Harvard professor, social psychologist, philosopher, and scholar Shoshana Zuboff, writer of The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power. Professor Zuboff discusses the new economic order that claims human experience is free raw material for commercial practices, as well as expanding the attack surface for digital information warfare. Here's a preview from Shoshana Zuboff.
We need the digital to tackle our most pressing problems as societies, whether it's solving the many forms of cancer, or whether it's solving climate crisis, or whether it's putting into play all over the world hundreds of millions of brilliant and loving teachers and doctors who are the real solutions for most of our problems. But we are not using the digital to do any of this, Steve. Most of the information that inhabits that domain comes from us without our permission, but it is not used for us. It is about us, but it is shunted into a narrow marketplace that is used to further others' aims.
We look forward to bringing you that next episode. In the meantime, we invite you to tune into our catalog of video and podcast episodes, all of which you can find at securityforum.org. We invite you to subscribe to the audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd be so grateful if you'd rate and recommend us. Growing our subscriber numbers helps us reach new audiences and helps us continue to bring you these timely discussions. You can always join in the conversation on our LinkedIn page or get in touch directly through our website, where you can also download ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like these. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Assistant producer Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.